Wednesday edition of Locked On Lions, everybody. Sam Monson from PFF is going to join us. And guess who's not on the injury report? Finally.
You are Locked On Lions, your daily Detroit Lions podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
What's happening, everybody? Matt Derry with you. It is a Wednesday edition of Locked On Lions on the Locked On Podcast Network. Matt Derry with you on a Wednesday, November 30th, and a Thursday, December the 1st. Hope everybody is doing well, feeling good, getting ready for Sunday. Tony Wiggins going to join us tomorrow for the Locked On Thursday crossover, the host of Locked On Jaguars. I love T. Wig. He's one of my favorite guys. Nobody knows the Jags better than Tony Wiggins. We're going to have him on tomorrow. Sam Monson is our guest today. From Pro Football Focus, I read Sam a lot, including in the offseason when he does his rankings and everything. He also hosts the PFF NFL podcast, co-hosts it with Steve Palazzolo. So Sam's going to join us momentarily. We'll get his thoughts on the 4-7 Lions. They get ready to take on the 4-win Jaguars. Trevor Lawrence and company coming into town on Sunday. It's like a reunion. Mark Brunell, Todd Walsh, all the former Jags coaches and Jag quarterback in Mark Brunell. Facing Jamal Agnew, Marvin Jones, the Riley Patterson revenge game. Yes, it could happen. All of that coming up Sunday at Ford Field. Follow us on Twitter, please, at Derry Speaks, D-E-R-Y Speaks, at Locked On Lions, the Matt Derry Facebook fan page, and we are available to you each and every day on the Locked On Lions YouTube channel where you can watch the video. News of the day very quickly before we get to Sam, and that is injury report is out on Wednesday, and it's out, you know, every Wednesday afternoon, and, you know, usual suspects are on there. Jonah Jackson was limited in practice, but he's coming back from a concussion. So is Jeffrey Okuda. Penei Sewell sitting out practice today. He's got a little bit of an ankle problem. But DeAndre Swift, for the first time since week one, is not listed on the injury report. Not even a full practice listing, not even a limited practice listing, not even a no practice. For the first time since the first week of the season, no ankle, no shoulder listed on the injury report for DeAndre Swift. What does this mean in the grand scheme of things? I don't know. I've said this on this show and I'll continue to say it. He's such a talented kid. He's a really good running back in space. But are the Lions letting him loose this week? Is this the week that they set aside all the mistakes that he seems to make, not hitting the right holes, not having great vision, going out of bounds when Deuce Staley wants him to put his shoulder down? Are they making some sort of proclamation today, not putting him on the injured list, not saying he has a shoulder problem or an ankle problem, which he has said would linger all season? What does this mean? Does this mean he's going to play more? Are we not going to see as much of Justin Jackson or Jamal Williams? Are we going to see the real DeAndre Swift, the guy we saw in week one against the Eagles, flash so much that you can't take him off the field? That's got to be the hope. This isn't the 85 Bears coming to town. Jacksonville can be leaky at times. Josh Allen's really good off the edge. Trayvon Walker, of course, the first pick in the draft. They got some pieces on their defense. But the home run threat that we were waiting on all year is now, at least on the Wednesday injury report, completely healthy. Are we going to see it this weekend? There's six games to go. They're 4-7. They could make a run. They went from a 1.5-point favorite to now being a 1.5-point underdog, which is interesting. But, man, we would love to see DeAndre Swift, the real one. You know, I hate to do an Eminem impersonation, but please stand up. Keep that in mind as we get ready for this game this Sunday. Not on the injury list. Not in the injury report, at least for this week. Evan Brown is. Penei Sewell is. Hopefully the Lions get their offensive line intact and healthy, having to face Allen and Walker and those guys and Arden Key, but we'll have to wait and see. All right, Sam Monson from PFF is coming up next. Want to tell you first, though, Locked On Lions today proudly brought to you by Turo, the world's largest car-sharing marketplace. With Turo, you can book any car you want, wherever you want it, from a community of local hosts. Browse a huge selection of vehicles for just about any occasion or budget across the U.S., UK, Canada, and Australia. Book a spacious SUV or minivan for a family road trip. Get a classic or luxury car for a special event, birthday, or holiday. Test drive the new electric vehicle that you want, all at Turo. Many Turo hosts can even deliver the car right to you. Every trip is backed by liability insurance. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply. Forget boring rental cars and find your drive at Turo, T-U-R-O.com. And Locked On Lions presented to you by Audible. Audible is releasing a slate of new football podcasts that we're sure you're going to love. Find Block Forever now wherever you get your podcast. Block Forever is a brand new podcast from former NFL All-Pro Ryan Khalil and Audible. Khalil takes the conversation about football to the next level. He gives football fans and insiders a look at the game through the eyes of the greatest players and personalities of all time. You'll hear guys like Christian McCaffrey on there, etc. A lot of fun. New episodes of Block Forever are recorded and released every week ahead of Thursday Night Football. Available for free on Audible or wherever you get your podcasts. Catch the full Block Forever series, available anywhere you get your podcasts, available everywhere right now. Audible, get in the game. And joining me right now today on Locked On Lions Wednesday edition, Sam Monson from PFF. We always love talking to the folks from Pro Football Focus. Always love reading Sam, especially in the offseason with all the rankings and the pieces he puts together. And he's our guest today. What's up, Sam?
Hey, how's it going?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Yep, yeah, appreciate it. All right, well, here the Lions sit with another four-win team coming to town this weekend in Jacksonville. How do you kind of assess where the Lions are right now? And what'd you think of Thursday? Because certainly that was a winnable game against a, you know, superior team.
Yeah, it was. And it kind of, in a way, it derailed the momentum, right? The run of consecutive victories. But in another way, it sort of showed that the momentum, I think, was real. Like, they were able to put it to one of the Super Bowl favorites, really hang with them. And as you say, kind of let it get away from them at the end. And really, it kind of came down to, I think, the difference between the two quarterbacks. When the Lions needed a couple of plays from Jared Goff, he wasn't quite able to make them. And when the Bills needed a couple of plays from Josh Allen, he delivered, right? And that's why Josh Allen's on this $45 million contract and seen as one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. It's why Jared Goff has been moved on from already and isn't quite at that level. But I think it showed that Detroit is definitely a better team than their record or than they certainly were earlier in the season. Jacksonville is a really interesting test because they're coming off a kind of signature game for them. They exercise a lot of demons, I think, with that last minute comeback against Baltimore. I think it was maybe the best game of Trevor Lawrence's NFL career. It was a signature drive, the kind of statement drive, statement comeback, statement win, statement game from Trevor Lawrence that shows that he can maybe be the guy that he was supposed to be when he was billed as this great quarterback prospect. So I think that's a fascinating test to see if Lawrence can do it again or if that was just a one-off.
Are the Lions where you expected them to be, sitting at 4-7? Obviously, the division is probably not what you expected, Sam. Right. But what about where Detroit sits right now with six games left?
Maybe a little bit worse off than I think we expected them to be. I know a lot of people were really high on Detroit's ability to maybe go on a run, maybe make the playoffs this season. I think I was a little bit lower on them because so many of the reasons the people were optimistic were kind of projections, right? I love the way they've gone about building, the way they've sort of done this rebuild, the multi-year project. Let's tear it down. Let's start building one component after another and stack all these bricks on top of each other. And then in year three, we'll be ready to roll. The problem with that is when you're doing that with these young guys, if you didn't get the right players, you know, or if you miss, or if the development takes longer than it's supposed to, all of a sudden the brick that you're stacking things on top of isn't the foundation piece you thought it was, and the whole thing doesn't really work as well. So, you know, when they loaded up with all these young defensive linemen, if those guys don't take the big step the next year, it's not doing what it's supposed to. And that was always the projection, is this will be the year we get, you know, Alim McNeil taking a step forward and Nwuzurike and all these young guys. And all of a sudden you've got this really good defensive line and then everything else falls into place. That hasn't really happened. We've seen flashes of it from Alim McNeil, but the whole kind of collective hasn't been as good as maybe people thought it would be. And when that happens, I think Detroit is still a little bit further away than they needed to be. And obviously, we're still waiting on, you know, a guy like Jameson Williams coming in and seeing what he can do. But I think they're still moving in the right direction, and they're not a million miles away from where everybody thought they would be.
Sam Monson with us from Pro Football Focus, PFF NFL podcast. He co-hosts that with our buddy Steve Palazzolo, and does a fantastic job with that. All right, so you mentioned kind of where they are, and you mentioned some of the players. Dan Campbell in year two certainly questioned plenty about fourth down stuff and decision-making early in the year. We saw what took place on Thursday with sort of the late game and the clock, which sort of Jeff Saturday emulated on Monday night. But how do you think Dan Campbell has done so far?
It's such a funny job, NFL head coach now, because it isn't really one job. It's four or five different jobs all rolled into one. You know, it's more of a, it's why the Jeff Saturday thing was fascinating, because the real criticism about that was he has no coaching credentials, right? He's coached high school and not to a particularly good record. So everybody railed against the lack of credentials or qualifications he has as a coach. But head coach in the NFL, I don't know how much, you know, coaching is actually involved in that, as opposed to man management, clock management, you know, people skills, organizational skills, the kind of infrastructure stuff that happens within the building and all those kinds of, like, the million of things that get rolled into that job. And you have to be able to do all of them, but one of the ones that's probably the smallest is actually your on-field X's and O's coaching part of it. That's what the coordinators do. That's what position coaches do. You oversee things on a much more broad level. So a guy like Dan Campbell, you know, whatever he is as a coach, I think it's pretty clear that he's got that kind of motivational quality. Like, people want to play for Dan Campbell. People like Dan Campbell. Even people that don't necessarily think he's very good, they like him, right? It's there's something engaging about him and makes you want to see him do well, if just because it's entertaining. And I think there's something to that. And in particular, in today's NFL, when, you know, head coaches have never had more access to other smart people that can do specific things, right? So the clock management thing, the fourth down decision stuff, there should be somebody in the building whose job it is to master that stuff and be able to be in your ear or be in a guy's ear who's in your ear. You know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't be doing that on your own during the course of a game, because what you're discovering with Jeff Saturday, for example, is it's a different world doing it on the couch and then going and talking about it on ESPN the next day than it is doing it on the sideline when you got 40 seconds between plays, when stuff's happening, when you have to think about down and distance, when you've got to think about the fourth down call that's coming up. Like, it's a whole different world. And that's why there's got to be a guy, you know, in the booth or somewhere on the headset that is preparing for that stuff while you're dealing with whether the left guard is actually hurt or whether he's just, you know, getting up slow from the pile. When you're dealing with, was that a fumble or did we get it back? Like, all those other things that are happening at the same time. So there's a degree to which I think the only way you can judge those guys is not, you know, are we good or bad at the 2-minute stuff? Are we good or bad at the fourth down calls? It's, are we at least making sure the right person is making that decision, right? And not trying to do it all ourselves. And then it's, you know, are you good at the kind of motivational thing? Do people want to play for you? Is everybody in the building on the same page? And then it just becomes, are you winning enough games or do you become the fall guy? Because, like, the head coach is inevitably the first guy out the door if the whole thing isn't resulting in the number of wins you need it to.
Let me ask you about playoffs real fast. And I know we can go, ha, 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 playoffs, Lions, but it's true. I mean, they've beaten the two teams in the wild card hunt right now that would be there if the season ended today, the Giants and the Commanders, the last two. The Lions have beaten. So how far away in your mind are they from teams like that? Are they not that far away, or is it just, God, the NFC sucks this year, so it's hard to gauge?
Yeah, I mean, we had an email into our podcast a few weeks ago. I think it was maybe after the first win or maybe even before all of them, who said that he believed the Lions are still going to make the playoffs this year. You know, and at the time it seemed crazy. And then they go on this run of three wins and all of a sudden it's a lot, you know, closer than it looked then. It's still for real, I think. It's possible. And it's not necessarily because the Lions are, you know, a much better team than they've looked throughout this year. But it is, like you said, that final wild card spot in particular, I think, is going to be wide open in the NFC. If you look at the remaining schedule for the Giants, it's pretty rough. Like, you could see the Giants dropping out of that spot. I don't think there's a lot of teams in the NFC that are going to take wins off each other. it would take a run. You know, they're still going to have to win quite a lot of games, but I think it's still doable. It's still achievable that the Lions could make the playoffs. And they've shown that they can hang with good teams. You know, it's not like you look at their schedule and you say, there's just no way they win, you know, these three games. It's not on the table at all. Like, they can go in there and have a realistic expectation of coming away with something in pretty much every one of those games. So I think it's probably too far. And I think that's the difference between where we thought they might be going into the year and where they actually are. But because of the NFC this year, it's still definitely on the table.
More with Sam Monson coming up next. I want to ask him about some particular players and what PFF thinks of them. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at LinkedIn Jobs. These days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% certain you've got access to the best qualified candidates available. That's why you got to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps find the right people for your team faster and for free. I've posted spots on my 9-to-5 from LinkedIn Jobs, and you should too. You just go on there. Add that purple hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile. That'll help spread the word that you're hiring. Simple tools like screening questions are available, make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience, so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. Really, it comes as simple as that. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNFL. That's LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNFL to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Sam Monson is with us from PFF, Pro Football Focus. Follow him on Twitter at @PFF_Sam. Also co-hosts the PFF NFL podcast. All right, Sam, I was joking before you came on the air. DeAndre Swift is not on the injury report for the first time since week one. It's like, hey, Swift's not on the injury report. It's almost like a national holiday here. But how does PFF gauge, or even you gauge, a player like that is so talented, yet carries have been taken away, Jamal Williams, Justin Jackson? How good is DeAndre Swift in your mind?
I think you're right that talented is the right word to describe him. Like, he's clearly a talented ball carrier. He can make guys miss. He's got a lot of skills. But a lot of times when you see situations where somebody like Jamal Williams is taking carries off somebody like Swift, it's because of some other things that are more difficult to see sometimes. And I don't know that his vision is necessarily great. You see a lot of plays where he's not taking the correct quote unquote path, or the sort of the path of least resistance a lot of times, and kind of tends to cut his way into trouble as opposed to away from it. And sometimes coaches in particular, that kind of riles them up, right? And they tend to go away from those guys and start giving them the ball to the steady hand, the guy that they know will at least do the right thing at the right time, even if he's not able to fix some of the issues and make plays off the back end of it. So the problem with that is there are times where running backs just kind of get in a rut of trying to do too much, or trying to, you know, make things happen that aren't necessarily on the cards. Or there are times when it is just a genuine flaw, or, you know, something that they're not great at. I don't think we're quite there at understanding where Swift falls into, whether he's just bad at that or whether he's trying to do too much now because of injuries and because of, you know, things that haven't necessarily gone his way so far. That's something that he has to answer, because all of a sudden he is seeing his playing time diminish and he's kind of falling a little bit out of favor relative to Williams. But he, you know, as I said, he has the talent to do it. So if he can figure out how to sort of get out of his own way, I think he could be a top tier back.
Amon-Ra St. Brown, is he a top 5, top 10, top 15 receiver in your mind? Where do you have him ranked?
It's really tough to – he's a really good receiver. He's a great route runner. He's got good hands. He understands defenses. He's able to get himself open all the time. The Lions also do a really good job of putting him in a great position, right? It's like 50-50 split between playing outside, playing in the slot. That gives him a lot of free releases. It gives him a lot of working against sort of favorable defensive coverages, and tends to take him away from the kind of defenses that can go physically toe-to-toe with top-end receivers and try and shut them down. So it's always really difficult to directly compare guys like him with guys like, you know, Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson, or these guys that are sort of elite number ones that spend a lot of their time one-on-one with the best cornerback that an opposing defense is going to deploy, and can win in every possible way, right? Are really good at the catch point, are really good after the catch, are really sort of physical, imposing specimens as well. So I think we've seen from him, like, he's definitely like a top 15 receiver easily. But I think to get into that kind of top five, you know, truly elite echelon, I think you need to be able to win in all ways, right? You need to have everything to your game. And I'm not completely sure that Sim Brown has that, or that he's just a great fit for the way they're currently using him.
Defensively, and it's coming up this weekend, here's Trayvon Walker at number one, Aiden Hutchinson at number two. They're going to play against each other, not obviously on the same field at the same time, but Lion fans will get a look at the man that went one pick ahead of Hutch, and I'm sure Jags fans are going to get to see Hutchinson, whom the Jaguars passed on. How do you kind of compare and contrast their years so far?
I mean, I think Hutchinson has been the better player so far, but I don't think either guy has really set the world alight, you know, in their rookie season. They're both, I think, rating averagely, slightly above averagely, depending on what facet, depending on what area you're looking at. Hutchinson has definitely generated more pressure. He's obviously got a couple of interceptions in there as well. Like, he's made a couple of big plays, but he's on the field like almost the whole time, right? He's rushing a lot. So you would expect a guy like that to generate a lot of pressure. And then for Trayvon Walker, we're kind of seeing more of what we saw in college, which is every now and again, you'll flash that crazy, absurd athleticism that we've really never seen before, the whole sort of totality of that package. But it's not generating to a consistent level of play. Like, we're not seeing a lot of pressure from him. We're not seeing a lot of anything consistently. We're just seeing like a flash of what it could be. And maybe down the line that becomes a much more well-rounded player. But I think like both guys are probably going to take a little bit of time to become the players that they were supposed to be.
Who else on defense stands out for you as somebody to that you like? And obviously there's some names, you know, Kirby Joseph, Malcolm Rodriguez, but anybody else stand out for you that you think, all right, this is going to be a fixture on this defense for the next 5 years?
Yeah, I mean, Kirby Joseph is obviously having a really good season. The Rodriguez looks fantastic, though. Like, he looks like an absolute find for this defense. Keeps popping up with these incredible PFF grades, keeps showing up around the ball, keeps making plays. And linebacker is one of these positions where it's so hard to translate into the NFL playing that position now. We saw Devin Lloyd, right, a first-round pick, had a couple of really good games earlier in the season, then disappeared, and all of a sudden he's benched, and he's now, like, basically a rotational guy now. When you think of all the developments in offense or scheme, X's and O's in the last 10 years, like, every one of them has put more stress on off-the-ball linebackers, right? It's making them cover multiple different things or read multiple different things at the same time and try and diagnose everything on the fly. And it's like, you don't have to go back that far when like a middle linebacker coming into the NFL was a really good position to be able to just translate immediately and be like a, you know, a defensive rookie of the year candidate straight away. It almost never happens now because those guys are so behind the eight ball going from a college defense to the NFL defenses and trying to like be up to speed mentally. And almost all these guys struggle year one, but Rodriguez isn't and looks like fantastic really early on. I think that's a great potential find for them down the line.
Just 30 seconds. Who is your defensive rookie of the year right now?
It's got to be Sauce Gardner, I think. That guy looks like one of the best corners in the league, not just best rookie corners. He's been almost shut down from the get-go, almost impossible to be deep, and is making a ton of plays.
Sam Monson from PFF. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Sam for joining us. And again, check out the podcast with he and Steve Palazzolo at PFF NFL Podcast. We're back again tomorrow with the Locked On Thursday crossover with Tony Wiggins from Locked On Jaguars. It's a Wednesday edition of Locked On Lions.